like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The Forever Stadium time is 8:39 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and True podcast, harbored by collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. I'm Drew Croson, at CenterCrow2 on Twitter, at CenterCrow on Venmo. To one side of me is the rumor monger via Skype, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S is for unstable internet.
Still connected for now.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay. And to the other side of me giving you full Fort Payne ASMR, a man who has just been sent off with a straight red, the AU chief.
Hello and welcome to the Orange and True podcast.
Chief, is that downtown Fort Payne behind you?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Guys, I just want a quick shout out. We don't do this enough. We had a fan lodge a complaint in the complaint department. And I want to say I don't usually take complaints well to the podcast, but our boy Colin, our man Colin, sorry, boy, it's derogatory.
He's my age, so
friend of the program.
Graduated with him.
Colin reached out and said, "Hey guys, can y'all mix Orange and True a little bit louder? I can't hear it on the interstate." So cool brag, Colin. We get it. You have a car, and you can drive.
He must be driving on.
You still get to go to work.
He must be driving on I-59 in Fort Payne.
But really, he did it the right way. He sent that comment through my Venmo account at CenterCrow on Venmo with an attached donation of $1 to the complaint department. So that complaint, hopefully, I took it up. I ran it up the flagpole. See how it goes. Colin, let's see if this is a little bit louder for you. Hopefully you can hear us on the interstate in your cool car that you get to drive to your cool office, your cool job. All right. Let's get started.
Colin told me he likes your tips on Taco Cabana. Just wanted to let you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Taco Cabana is the best.
He's in Austin, so.
Oh.
Oh. He's probably driving the Mopac then. That's why it's so loud. Austin's the worst traffic. Great city, worst traffic. Guys, we have to update the listeners on the Auburn soccer season. Dear listeners, Auburn soccer has as many losses as you do, which is zero still.
Had a heartbreaking draw the other night, though.
That's true, but you still got a result, which makes you 2-0-2, 2-0-2. So Auburn is still undefeated in the young 2020 season. Young, but more than halfway over.
Yeah, almost over.
So
they're gonna play what, five games in like 10 days?
A lot of games here pretty quick.
Crazy.
All right, so here's how it's gonna work, guys. October 30th, which is Friday, Auburn goes to number 7 Arkansas, and that's a huge game because Auburn has 2 top 10 games left, both on the road. If Auburn can split those, its ranking should be pretty high, and its seeding in the SEC tournament will be pretty nice. Anyway, so it's a road trip on the 30th to Arkansas, followed up with just a few days later in Baton Rouge, which is a game that was postponed from earlier this month. Then, on November the 6th, so the same week, 2 games in a week, Auburn hosts the Tide in the Iron Bowl of soccer, and then goes on the 9th, the following Monday, to Texas A&M, to College Station number 8, Texas A&M, in a game that was postponed from September. So that is, we play Friday, the following Monday, the following Friday, and the following Monday. And only one of those games is at home. So if you are listening to this and have the means and are able to be in public and live in the Auburn, Alabama area, figure out a way to get up in that Auburn soccer complex for that Iron Bowl of soccer, the only home game left. And a chance to see what, if they win against Arkansas, a potentially top 10 Auburn Tigers team, play the Tide.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see, I don't know, I feel as if there's a really good chance that Auburn could beat Arkansas, but I'm not 100% sure. I haven't, to be honest, kept up with Arkansas's team this year much.
Should
Auburn's team play as well?
Would it, should I point out that the last time that we talked this team up like this, I think they only won one more game in the whole season.
Well,
last year.
It's true.
Uh oh.
Ryan
wrote an article on the website.
Oh. Yeah, it's because Crow wrote an article on the website. It's true.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So just don't write an article.
So Auburn was 14th in one ranking going into that Kentucky game. And then didn't.
What's the equivalent of the way the football game went? Is there a fumbled spike, turnaround, backwards pass? Maybe immediate recovery.
Oh, you're asking.
Is there a soccer equivalent to just totally butchering something like that?
Yeah, the equivalent would be like a goalie catches a penalty kick only to have it fall out of her hands behind her and roll into the net.
Yeah, yeah. That or, would be she, or she deflects it, but off of a defender that was rushing into the box, and it bounces into the goal.
But it's got to be a goalkeeper mistake, which are usually called howling, yeah. Ryan.
So let's say the goalkeeper deflects it straight up in the air, celebrates. I don't know, the ref blow whistle at that point on a ball that goes out of play.
Oh, it could be exactly what Jordan Pickford
did. Call it dead, and then the ball bounces and rolls in. But since it was already dead, it doesn't matter.
So you're saying we win even though there's some awful mistake?
Sure.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. Just a horrible goalkeeper own goal that is somehow overturned through video assistant referee. Do they have video assistant referee in women's college soccer?
I think they might.
For those of you listening at home, that's just like a review.
I'm almost positive they do. They have the VAR.
But it's overturned, even though it clearly looks like it should have counted somehow.
I think the and then they have to change a rule immediately following the game.
Yeah.
To make it to where that can't happen again. Because what that does,
Bama Twitter is going to be so mad.
What that does, and this is what Bama Twitter doesn't understand, by admitting that the conference had to change a rule, they are admitting that what Auburn did was not against the rules when Auburn did it.
But it's gotcha and grab ass,
right?
Somehow.
I mean, just legal. It's just legal play, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well. I hope they continue despite the praise we've heaped on them here. Their winning ways, go undefeated. They could be the Invincibles of the SEC season.
It would be typical of Auburn for the soccer team to win the national championship this year.
Oh, that would be great.
When like we have
are they having a tournament?
I don't know. They have an SEC tournament according to the Auburn website.
Okay, that's nice.
I assume most of the West Coast schools would not play in any kind of national tournament.
Yeah, yeah. They're playing at all.
Right.
Which gives Auburn a really good chance.
The governor of California doesn't even want more than 6 people at your Thanksgiving shindig. So,
I mean, it isn't like the virus the slowed down.
To not invite that brother that you hate.
It's true. All right. Let's get to basketball.
Before we move on from soccer, I had a little something. It was related to my intro earlier. Hello and welcome is the famous intro to the Total Soccer Show. Its host, Daryl Grove, who was a British fellow, he passed away this week. And I know we all – I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you've listened to other podcasts. And because God help you if this is the only podcast you listen to.
No, I love that.
But I mean, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, you sort of take the people that do the podcast into your home. I like to think that we you know, into your home, into your car, wherever you are. Daryl was – I probably listened to the show for a couple years now. And just, you know, you feel like you know somebody. And he was a young guy. I think he was only around 38, and he passed away from colon cancer. Just wanted to remember him for a minute. And just – guys, I'm sure we have a few people here that are near 40. If you're 40 and over, I believe you're supposed to get your cornhole checked.
Correct.
And
I believe that's the medical term for it.
Yes. So just as Lawrence says to Peter, watch out for your cornhole.
Exactly.
Go and get screened. Because it can, if they catch it early, you're usually fine. They caught Daryl's pretty late. And it's really sad. I've just been thinking a lot about him and his family and his co-host Taylor. Sad day, but he was a great guy. He was great for the game of soccer in this country. Since we are a soccer podcast, I felt like that was relevant. Yeah, that's pretty much it. On to happier things.
On to happier things about basketball. Unfortunately, it appears that the Orlando event that was hosted by ESPN is falling victim to the global pandemic that is crippling us all. But there's going to be another tournament scheduled in Fort Myers, Florida. So a different Fairburg of the state of Florida will be hosting a different tournament, most likely. And Auburn will
I wonder why it fell apart.
Disney has said they're not doing any more bubbles. I read that today.
Okay.
I assume there's just less COVID, you know, 50 miles away.
Sure.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
Virus can't travel that fast. No, I read today that Disney's announced that they're kind of out of the bubble business. I think they're taking they won't take a couple months off before they probably have to do it in an NBA one again.
So what I think that probably is the NBA bubble was probably a little more lucrative to them than this would have been.
Yeah, and I also think and this is not to be fatalistic. I honestly think that they are keeping their powder dry for in case Adam Silver calls them again and says, "Hey, you know what? Maybe we'll just do it all over again, starting in December."
I imagine that's going to happen in December. So that's probably why. And Disney seems to have a handle on it. Because
they had zero cases, not one case.
Yep. Well, and you know the parks were open at the same time.
Yeah.
That this is going on, and they honestly there hasn't been any sort of like super spreader event at the parks with them being open. Yeah. So, I am not shocked that Disney has a handle on things.
I'm also not sure that the NBA was the one league to pull off something off that was zero cases.
Well, it's easier because it's less people.
And they're the most on board league. Like the other leagues, there's this, like baseball, for instance. If the owners say the sky is blue, the Players Association has to immediately respond with, no, it's not, it's green.
Sure.
Like they just have to. And then vice versa is true as well. The Players Association says, we want this. The owners group has to say, no. We're not bound to labor on this. Whereas the Players Association, the NBA, even though they've had some contentious strikes recently, they seem to play ball with the owners and vice versa. And they both seem to see the dollar signs involved in playing in this situation.
In this situation, for sure, they both were like, none of us are going to get any money.
Look at what happened in baseball. Baseball kept having to postpone because the Players Association couldn't figure out how to negotiate. They couldn't figure out how to negotiate money with the owners.
The players still never agreed to any sort of bubble until the playoffs, right?
Right.
Like,
and then, look, the NHL. NHL has... A buddy of mine mentioned this to me, and once he said it, I noticed it. The NHL, from the beginning of COVID to now, has released what its plans are within 24 hours of the NBA releasing what its plans are. And it legitimately has almost always been a copy and paste. It's like, what'd you guys do? What was that B on your paper? Okay, let me go ahead and put that down on mine. Seems good for them. It's the NHL is to the NBA like that CVS that pops up across the street from the Walgreens 6 months later. It's like, oh, well, this intersection's good for the drugstore. We'll put one here too. But yeah, so I think I could see that happening again. So Auburn's going to Fort Myers, allegedly. Mm-hmm. Again, none of this is set in stone, guys. None of it is. All dates are tentative. Auburn will have an unknown opponent. We don't even know who they're playing to open the season this year.
I think it's pretty sure there's going to be Gonzaga.
No, we're playing Gonzaga on the 27th.
Oh, okay.
We don't know who our first opponent is. There's four teams going to this tournament. And one of them is Gonzaga. One of them is Auburn. And
Kansas
is the third, and we don't have the fourth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it's still exciting. At least we're going to get that Gonzaga game in.
There's a decent chance Gonzaga will be number one in America when Auburn plays them.
Yeah.
And then Auburn plays Baylor, who
is number two.
Is currently right? Number two to Gonzaga, or number one with Gonzaga number two, depending on what ranking service you're using. But Auburn doesn't play them until January the 30th.
And remind the listeners again who the point guard is for this Baylor team.
Well, it would be, now you say that, and I went blank on his name.
Davion Mitchell.
Davion Mitchell. I was about to say Deshaun Murray. It's like, nope, that's not it. Davion Mitchell. Yeah, Davion Mitchell, who, when he came to Auburn, was thought of as this elite perimeter defender and is now like legitimately one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball, in college basketball.
Yeah.
Transferred because he didn't want to sit behind Jared another year.
Could have used him last year.
Yeah, that would have been a pretty nasty front line or back line with Davion and Samir and Isaac.
Yeah.
But that's not to take anything away from Javon, who quickly became one of my favorite players last year. But I think this year, playing a team as good and as old as Gonzaga this early, I don't think Auburn's going to win.
We haven't seen this team play, so there's no reason to think that they're capable of winning against a team like that.
But I do think it's the best thing it's the best thing Bruce can do. Because basketball is different than football.
Yeah.
For so many wonderful reasons. The first is you almost want to lose a game early.
Oh.
So that you can
you
have something to hold over your team's head. Sure. So you don't actually want to lose a game, and Bruce would probably be the first to tell you, like, no, you want to win every game you play. Yes. You do. You want to go undefeated and win the national championship. But losing a game early can also be a positive because you can go see. That's what I've been telling you guys at practice. That's what I've been telling you guys. You guys are not ready yet. So you better listen to me because from here on out, we're going to do things my way and we're going to win games. We did things your way. You point at it. You know, you do all that coach stuff nonsense and your team starts playing. So you've got – we've got the chance for a Sharif Cooper coming out party on national television as well, though. Which I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about. I don't know if you read Ferg's article on Sharif Cooper.
Me?
Yeah, you're the only one.
Not yet. It's bookmarked.
Ryan, have you read it? Ryan, are you back?
I have not, and I am back.
Great. So basically, he goes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so friend of the program and host of a better podcast than this. Justin Ferguson goes into the hype around Sharif Cooper and how in practice he's been thought of as better than people even expected in some ways. And then there are other people I'm reading on the internet who are saying, like not for other people reading on the internet saying that he's the Trae Young 2.0. And I've actually heard that from another number of people. That's actually his better comp. And guys, if that's his comp, I mean, Trae Young was a bonkers college player. and was the type of college player that could have done whatever he wanted. His issue was he played on a team that had nobody but him.
Yeah, there's a bunch of bums, and he shot like 500 times a game.
I don't think Bruce is going to put that kind of usage on Sharif unless it becomes obvious that Sharif is leaving after this year. Then maybe he goes, yeah, man, shoot it 100 times. Dude, you got to dig. These are the only shots I get from you? Great, take them all. But I could – if that's the type of talent and court vision, because that wasn't – Trae Young's biggest skill isn't his shooting, it's his passing. And if Sharif's the level of passer that guy was in college, then Auburn should have a lot of open layups and dunks from other guys.
Sure.
And exciting plays like that, pushing plays, push plays, where the ball comes down the court in a hurry, quickly moves to somebody who's open, and they get a fast break dunk. That type of stuff
seems like
exciting.
It would fit with the way the roster is constructed right now.
Well,
Cambridge and Williams
and Stretch.
A lot of just freak athletes that can run the floor.
So was Cambridge also on that AOT team with them? Is that true?
Cambridge is from Tennessee.
Okay. Well, I think Cambridge there was something interesting about
him. You're right. He was on AOT. Okay.
So he was on there. Stretch was on there, and Tarif. Was anybody else?
Okoro.
Okay, but Okoro's not here. But that's right. Three guys in the starting lineup that have all played extensively together already, albeit not in college, but at a pretty high level of pre-college ball. So that's also something to think about when you assess what you think this team might be capable of.
Yeah. So you're looking at.
I think we're getting this wrong. I don't think he was on the AAU team.
He was. I've seen it. Oh, there's a picture of him on Google of him wearing that AOT jersey.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was not.
Real GM was saying.
Yeah, he was not on their. The elite, but. He was not on their 2018-2019 Running Rebels roster. According to realgm.com, but there is a photograph on Google image search, unless he just borrowed a jersey for this official photo.
No, I read something about him last year. I think he played on a different team and then he played on that team.
Okay.
And he, of course he wouldn't have been on the 18-19 would have been a senior year, but yeah, there was something weird about, he did not live where they lived and he ended up playing with them. I don't remember what that
seems
was.
Seems above board, in my opinion.
Sure.
As compared to anything else in AAU, sure.
That was my favorite talk last week. In case you missed it, last week Ryan and I interviewed Stephen Godfrey from Banner Society. You should go back and listen to that. But he made a really good comment. Did he make that on the pod, Ryan, or did he just to us about?
I think that was on the podcast.
Yeah, about
it was. I listened.
School basketball recruiting being just. Like as dirty as his articles that expose the underbelly of college football recruiting, and he has the best articles about that. People who know basketball kind of pat him on the head and be like, "Man, you have no idea." Like it's just what he's talking about in football is just the most run of the mill. It's what like you know every Providence does. It's what every school there's 400 Division I schools or whatever. They all gotta eat. So, yeah, the Auburn official site says that he played on the Nike EYBL circuit with Athletes of Tomorrow. And averaged 15 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 block a game in those games.
Yep.
So that put him on the same team as Sharif and Stretch and Okoro.
What a team.
Yeah.
So that's 3 guys in the starting lineup who've played together before. And well, on a team together, and then the rest of the starting lineup should be Cambridge, Williams, and
I think it's going to be Allen Flanagan.
So that's 3 other guys that have played a season together.
Yeah.
So there should be some pretty good chemistry on this team, despite them not, you know, despite a lot of new faces, a lot of new starters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty bullish on this team. I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I know everybody's trying to tamp down expectations. But I don't know. This is the most talent we've ever had on a team, probably.
When he signed, Sharif Cooper is the highest ranked recruit. Sharif Cooper will be the highest ranked recruit to ever have played for Auburn when he plays his first game. And that means something. So this guy could be the best when he puts the sneakers on. He'll be the best player to have played for Auburn according to High School Basketball Recruiting Services.
Right.
The most NBA ready, I guess.
The only knock on him is his size, really. I mean, he's not as short as Jared Harper. He's taller than that. And I'm sure he's I think we've discussed he's bulked up a little bit since last we saw his measurements. So, you know, you never know. He may need it. You know, he may need another year unless he just lights it completely up.
He's listed as the same height as Jared was listed.
Right.
But I don't believe that is the case.
But I just feel like this is the most talented team that we'll have ever had.
Until next year.
Until next year. But to this point. And we have the best coach we've ever had. So I don't know why we wouldn't expect them to do pretty well. I mean, Kentucky starts five freshmen pretty regularly and they do okay. I'm not saying you should be expecting us to win the conference or whatever. But I don't know. I think this team could do a lot come February if we actually have a tournament. So
if we actually have a tournament.
Yeah.
Guys, in other basketball, Auburn basketball news that is more soon to come than the tournament, Isaac Okoro was projected by the Ringer to the Spurs after the Spurs trade DeMar DeRozan and the 11th pick to the Hawks. If the Spurs trade DeMar DeRozan, that's a huge move. And to the point of I almost don't want that for Isaac because
that's a lot of pressure.
It forever links him and not only him and DeRozan, but him and that 11th pick. In the same way that, unfairly, Trae Young and Luka Doncic will be forever linked. Even though Trae Young will be a great player on his own right one day, probably a multiple-time All-Star, he now has to live up to whatever Luka becomes just because of a draft day trade. Okoro doesn't need that. Okoro doesn't need to be part of some – like DeRozan is a great player. And then we don't know who the 11th pick is going to be. So now he's got to kind of live up to being worth two players, basically.
Does that signal a full-on rebuild?
Yeah, absolutely it does. If they trade
wonderful
effectively two players for Okoro, they are full-on rebuild. And who knows what – I mean, like – the Spurs haven't been in a rebuild in
my lifetime.
Yeah, in your lifetime at least. Like the closest thing was when they drafted Tim Duncan after tanking when David Robinson got hurt. Like that's it. Like, and that was
98, 99.
Yeah, that's been a while. I mean, the Spurs have not been bad in a long, long time. So they won the title the next year. Tim Duncan's rookie year. So it wasn't like they rebuilt. They just drafted the best player they could and became a title contender. Yeah. Basketball's great. Some teams are rebuilding like the Bucks forever and ever and ever and ever and never make it to the top of the heap. Other teams like the Spurs draft Tim Duncan, title the next year.
Well, that would be like if the Warriors, you know, whoever they draft this year breaks out and they just go back to, you know, three seed.
Yeah, and the Warriors, similar to the Spurs, they really were probably a pretty good team, the Spurs. They just had David Robinson get hurt. And,
So what are we, three weeks away from the draft?
Yeah, I think that's right. 3 weeks away from the draft, we are the buzz on Okoro is permanent now, it seems. Like, it's just like, it's everywhere. The buzz on Okoro is everything from I'm seeing the Knicks literally tweet about him, which is weird. As have the Wizards. The Wizards have literally tweeted about Okoro, which is – I didn't realize the NBA teams could do that.
Yeah, at this point, they might be having to to move up to get him. It seems like he's getting borderline top five.
Man, which is wild. And I think it's because the lack of pre-draft workouts this year, the lack of, you know, that stuff because of the pandemic. People are taking guys who weren't hurt, who have good film, who don't need a bunch of, you know, who don't need a lot of like, I got to get this guy in person to see what he's really about and interview his coaches, interview his families to make sure we can draft him right. So you're going to see guys take the closest thing to a sure thing they can in this draft. There's not a lot of sure things in this draft. So Okoro might be one of the only quote-unquote sure things teams have. And GMs don't want to get fired in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, so that comes to the point I wanted to make. I dropped off there, so I don't know if you talked about the Warriors were in town.
No, I didn't talk about that.
The Warriors were in town, including one Stephen Kerr, son of a former U.S. ambassador and coach of the Golden State Warriors, for those of you that don't know, and former Bull. Mm-hmm. He was here, and they were working him out, which leads me to think, if all these teams are supposedly interested in him, Isaac's stock is pretty high.
Yeah, we were talking about how his stock has continued to rise.
And it's funny that he's like pretty consistently, though, like pick number six. Mm-hmm. Is like where people are seeing a guy who is the only thing, as you just said, that might just be a sure thing in the draft.
Yeah, not that he's going to be a star, but you can be pretty confident you're not going to get burned by picking him.
I think he's probably going to be in the league for 15 years.
Yeah, I think he's a consistent number six pick because he's a consistent number six. Like, he's not the number one pick in the draft. I don't think anybody thinks that.
Right.
I think the Warriors coming in town is odd because they don't have the number six pick. They'd have to trade back.
They would be trading down.
They're trade back. Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I mean, seems cool.
That was what was pretty crazy to me, yeah, that they would be willing,
unless they take him at two.
No, I don't think there's any way to do that.
I don't think so either.
But I think it still remains that they sort of value him at the two, that they're willing to give it up to get him.
I think the Warriors, like that, this isn't an NBA draft podcast. There are people out there who know a lot more than we do. But I think the Warriors are clearing out cap space to get Giannis. So the Warriors will
– hot take.
Yeah, well, not that hot. A lot of people think that, I think. The Warriors are going to – if they get Okoro, it's because they're going to let somebody else on the team take a walk.
Well, I hope LeBron enjoyed that one Western Conference championship.
It's a joke. Like, they're going to get – and they're going to get him. Like, if they want Giannis, why would he not go play with two walking buckets?
Well, he could not carry the Bucks to – the finish line here.
No, and they didn't even look like they were a couple players away, and that was pretty glaring. And they can't even say they had to go on the road or anything. That they played in a bubble. It was just 100% neutral site games. So it really was, in my opinion, the team that could focus the most that won that thing. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk a little football.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we are back 33 minutes, 30 seconds into this delicious podcast that I'm sure you're feasting on with extra sauce. And we are talking Auburn football because it's that time of the year and we have to.
Yeah. I'll have a boots on the ground report next week for you.
Now we're talking.
Be in the stadium? All right.
I'm going to the game this weekend. So
booted up, masked up.
Yep. I haven't even looked at the weather. I don't know what it's going to supposed to be this
week. It's supposed to be a little chilly.
If you're getting what we have right now, it's going to be cold. Because we woke up this morning here in Plano, Texas, and it was 39 degrees.
Oh, wow. That happened here a few weeks ago, but for about a week. But
it was one of those things where I've convinced the wife to not turn the heater on. Oh. Like, we just...
No,
we've been rolling it with just air conditioner off, basically.
Yeah.
Because it's been nice. Yeah. And it was supposed to get down to like 75 or 65 last night, 59 at the low. And so we were like, oh, yeah, no big deal. We'll leave the air conditioner off. It'll get kind of cold. We'll just put the blanket. We woke up today. It was like 55 in the house.
Wonderful.
We were all just like, everybody just freezing. We had like our 2-year-old up. She's just freezing to death.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 67 that day. So it not cold. It'll be nice.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. 55 is the low, too, so it's like not even a like big fluctuation.
Watch out for that October sun, though, Chief.
Oh, yeah, buddy. I know. I know all about it. And then the next day, we got a high of 69.
Nice.
But then we start hitting pretty consistent lows in the 40s. So that's been your weather report here for the Auburn area. For those of you that don't live here, I'm sure.
Well, Chief, but the October sun is something that you instructed me about in Auburn. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It is.
Sounds like a war movie.
October sun. Or a really cheesy movie about, like, childhood.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, October sun, for the listeners that don't know, it's when it's chilly. There's a chill in the air, but the sun is just broiling hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just the most uncomfortable time. It can happen in the spring too. It happens there, and it can happen in any day of the month that it just happens to be cool. But there's just a sun that's just,
you can get a sunburn in October.
Yeah. It's awful. It's the worst. You can see it. You can look outside and tell that there's October sun because it looks like fall outside, but that sun's there and it's just baking everything.
Four young boys, a friendship that would mark their lifetime, and experiences that would turn them into a man, into men. See October sun.
Amen. Just one man.
Amen. The October sun melts them into one person.
Power Rangers prequel.
Or that experience is they're sneaking into a rated R movie and they sit on top of each other's shoulders with a big trench coat over it.
So it's going to be Halloween. We're playing the corn dogs. And
they'll stay up too late the night before watching Mandalorian on repeat.
Is that a night game?
No, it's a 2:30 game.
Yes.
Dadgummit.
Yeah, so that October sun is going to be in full effect.
Well, last week we played at 11 o'clock in the morning, and my afternoon was shot. Even though it was a short game, probably the shortest Auburn game I remember.
I mean, ever. It was – they were hustling.
The first the first quarter was over in 30 minutes.
As my granddad used to say, humping it.
Yeah, 30 minutes, guys. I remember I literally went over to my brother's house. I showed up late to watch the game and missed the entire first quarter. Because
the kickoff actually happened around 11:07, and the first quarter ended at 11:37. Like, it was so,
geez. It was quick, and then the whole game was over before two. Like, it's like 2 o'clock. The game was over.
Yep.
We've included a halftime that is so, like, I don't even understand why the halftimes are still the same length. They could shorten the halftimes.
You got to let them get their rest in at half.
I guess.
And trust me, Auburn's defense needs that rest.
I feel like they're still longer than NFL halves, which makes no sense. They should be the exact same length as the NFL half now. They're doing the same thing.
Well, in college, you can choose between two half lengths, I believe, is correct.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
Somebody can – I'm pretty sure that's right. I think you can either have a 15 or – 20. I bet James Jones
is screaming at his radio right now.
James, somebody else will know better.
I mean, with college, you're normally trying to navigate halftime shows with the bands, which is part of why it takes so long there.
But you got a band. You got some donor who donated a new locker room for the swimming complex. You've got some three guys who are on the 1936 basketball team that went to, I don't know, a game against some team somewhere and won it.
Got to honor the pilots from the flyover.
Well, no, that's not a halftime usually. That's usually third or fourth quarter, right?
Yeah, that's true. You got some girl who was voted Miss whatever for her sorority. There's a lot going on. But Auburn beat Ole Miss 35-28. No matter what anyone tells you on the internet, or no matter what anyone tells you from Auburn Twitter, Auburn won the game on Saturday.
In fact, they have won three games.
Auburn Auburn's one of only three SEC teams with three wins.
Well, you know, the referees are always helping out Auburn.
Sure.
So.
Tale's old as time. Auburn bailed out by the refs.
It's just an SEC conspiracy in Birmingham.
Yeah.
Everybody calls it Barmerham. Barnerham.
Prize program.
Auburn quarterback Bo Nix, 23 for 30, 238 yards, one touchdown, 10 carries, 52 yards, and a touchdown. The fewest number of off-target throws all season, four.
His absolute best game away from home.
Maybe his best game, including home.
Maybe.
As far as not making mistakes, this was his best game. And he's had more big plays than like in the Iron Bowl and in the Mississippi State game last year. But
I don't know about the making mistakes thing though, because he did not throw a pick like for the last half of last season.
He threw seven incomplete passes in this game. That's nuts. I feel like he threw seven incomplete passes on some drives last week.
Yeah. In the South Carolina game, according to SEC StatCat, I think it was 27 off target throws.
Mm.
He had four against Ole Miss. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
Nice little step up there.
Yeah, that South Carolina game was an abomination from him. There's no way to sugarcoat that. Tank Bigsby, our golden god, 24 carries, 129 yards, and two touchdowns. People saying he didn't get the ball enough in the red zone, and he answered with two red zone scores.
Should have been able to add a 100-yard kickoff return on there too.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
those refs are just helping us out so much. They didn't have that touchdown.
They give and they take away, guys. They give and they take away.
The only complaint I have about Tank is that he did not start the game. That's the only complaint I have.
Does it matter though? I mean, he still led the team in carries by a wide margin.
Yeah, but we went three and out on the first possession, which we could have used some points on. So.
Yeah, but it wasn't like Shivers was bad that game.
There was a decision on that first opening drive that he made that may have cost us some yards. So
yeah, but throughout the game, Shivers played well. I would say that was one of the things about the game that was so effective was Auburn had two running backs that could actually play.
Right. I would have just rather seen Tank on that first drive.
Seth Williams, 8 catches for a smooth 150 yards. And a touchdown. Proving once again, regardless of what anybody tells you, Seth Williams is Auburn's best player. But don't
two across the middle. Two slants.
I thought he quit on the team, though.
Well, you know, Ryan, it turns out that Seth Williams might be the first ever receiver that might be a little tough to deal with.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like most receivers taciturn. Don't really yell at their quarterbacks much. You've never seen a receiver take plays off. You've never seen a receiver maybe make too many gyrant, like big motions on the sidelines.
They all have the personality of a CPA.
Yeah, as well. Most receivers are pretty low-key dudes. You're
especially used to that being from Dallas, of just really toned-down wide receivers, you know, no personality. Yeah,
absolutely. They score a touchdown, they run right back to the huddle. That's what they do. No, Seth Williams is a wide receiver, and he's an NFL wide receiver who we get the joy of seeing play in an Auburn uniform this year. But next year, he will make millions of dollars to do his antics all across someone's field on Sundays. And he balled out against Ole Miss.
Well, he's pretty dang good. Ole Miss offered very little resistance to our offense.
Sure. Well,
we'll say that. I did try to there were people, it's just Ole Miss that I was talking to during the game. And I'm like, yeah, but our offense still looks better than it has all year. Like, no matter who the opponent is, like, we're actually doing things a little differently. We're actually running the ball. We didn't throw 40 times. Like,
and I'll say I was in our Slack very critical of Auburn's defense during this game.
Yeah.
But looking at it now, the benefit of hindsight is seeing that Auburn, this offense of Ole Miss, put up monster points in every game of this season, and Auburn held it to 28. Auburn held Matt Corral to 150 yards. Period.
Well, that's because the other guy was in there for half the time,
and Auburn held their best receiver and maybe the best receiver in the conference, who's healthy.
There's a disclaimer to add after Waddle went down.
To 16 yards receiving and a touchdown. Five catches, 16 yards. That's all he had.
Pretty good. Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that was the focus of our defense. And that's why they were able to run on us a fair amount. And why they had some success throwing to some other people.
And I will say this, as a fan who doesn't, I know a decent amount about football, but I'm not the X and O guy that I am in maybe other things or whatever. But it is more frustrating when a team runs the ball against you than it is when a team throws the ball against you in some ways. And so in this game, it felt frustrating to me as a fan when Ole Miss would pick up a third and two or a second and six running the ball. But Kevin Steele was thinking, well, they're running out of time. Whenever they run the ball, they are running out of time, and they aren't throwing the ball. So they're not scoring quick enough to really put this game out of reach. Because Auburn's offense is good, but it's not putting anything out of reach.
This was definitely the Kevin Steele tactic of, we'll give you stuff, over the middle, down low all day, but you're not breaking any big plays.
Yeah.
Maybe they really didn't. It's the vaunted passing offense that only went for 154 yards. The last play of the game, we can talk about the whole last sequence here, I guess, but the last play of the game still cracks me up. The throw to the end zone from 5 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Wow, yeah.
Well, when he did it, I remember being like, well, he's cross line scrimmage, and then my brother I was watching with was like, go down, like yelling at the Auburn player, like, just go down. And I was like, why? This play didn't count. I don't even think if he had ran it back for a touchdown, we would have gotten 7. You know what I mean?
Well, it's still recorded as an actual interception.
It did?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think it was just a decline penalty.
Because it's an illegal throw.
Right. What the interesting thing about this game is that I think Kiffin really screwed up when they had the lead and he decided to go conservative for the first time in the game.
Yeah.
And basically just gave us the ball back. Doing that.
I think Kiffin
did not have a good game, period.
I think Josh Black made the comment.
The fake field goal. The whole last 5 minutes of not challenging the kickoff and
I
think Josh. Then he blamed the SEC refs for not looking at it. But am I wrong? He had the ability to challenge that.
Yeah, I've been asking a lot of people about like what the reasoning is with that, and all I can get is that a ref on the field told him there was nothing there. But he wouldn't have seen the review either.
Right.
It's not like play was stopped, that like the replay booth would have had several looks at it and communicated it down. So
like at least call a timeout.
Yeah.
He's done an excellent job.
You have the lead. That's the thing. It's not like, oh, I have to save these timeouts. You have the lead. You have to challenge that play.
Yeah.
He's done a really excellent job at making everyone think that it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
Even Auburn fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's done an excellent job making it feel like, making everyone think, oh, well, he couldn't have done anything. The refs should have just challenged it. Well, I mean, yes, I think that the idea of coaches' challenge is silly because every play should be under review instead of, like, why should the coaches have to save challenge? It's a weird wrinkle. But that he had that. He had that flag in his bag. He could have thrown it. Like, why not? Challenge that play. Unless he didn't think anything was there because the ref told him nothing was there and he believed him.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but we're all acting like this replay was extremely definitive when it was questionable at best.
Yeah, I think people are acting like that because the announcers themselves were like, oh, yeah, it definitely hit his finger. It definitely did it. I
don't know.
I don't know that it gets overturned because I don't think that it's definitive that it did.
Yeah.
Like you can look at it and be like, yeah, that probably hit his finger. Cause that's how I was. I was like, it probably hit it. But, there's no way to, CSI Miami enhance it
and right.
Zoom in and see if it hit his finger and be able to tell for sure. I'm just ready for the robot referee revolution and we can all be done with this.
All right. So let's go into Ryan, let's do some nerd stats at the halfway point for Auburn. Quickly run through those.
Offense or defense first?
We're halfway through the season.
Yeah. Go offense.
Halfway, five games.
Go offense for Auburn, then defense, and then lead us right to the LSU Tigers. And we'll talk about them to close the show.
All right. So there's been a lot of discrepancy in the passing game and the rushing game, and I think everybody has seen it. But let's look in the numbers. Auburn's passing game, yards per play, 5.6. That's per called pass, not just pass attempts. Explosive play percentage. Auburn's ninth in the SEC in explosive pass play percentage. 10th in sack rate, 10th in pressure rate. Overall, just not great at throwing the ball. And yet, we're third in the conference at pass attempts. So, not ideal. But, you know, maybe you could say, oh, Auburn's not running the ball well either. You know, got to do something. Well, that's not really the case because Auburn is first in the conference in yards per called run, first in the conference in explosive run play percentage, third in yards before contact, and third in yards after contact. You could argue that's the best rushing offense in the conference, I think. And that's after a slow start of the season where we weren't really running the ball great against Kentucky or Georgia.
So Auburn should be running the ball a lot more than it even already is.
Yeah. I have gone on record on the pod last week, I believe I mentioned this, is we should just run the Nick Marshall offense.
Well, Bo Nix. I think we did a little bit.
That's basically what we did with some slants thrown in.
I think you're looking at I was talking to Ryan before the pod in the green room about how maybe this is – hopefully this is not a math problem in that maybe because Auburn's throwing it so much, defenses are having to play less linebackers, and so Tank is running against six-man fronts, seven-man fronts.
I think you saw as we ran a lot more this week, we were more successful passing, and I expect that to continue. The more we run, the better we'll pass.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. I hope so. I hope at least you're right. I hope it's not the opposite. I hope it isn't that we are running well because they are having to play our terrible passing offense with more defensive backs.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, the changing it up, we finally ran the ball a lot more, and that helped not just the ground game, but also the passing game against Ole Miss. So hopefully we can carry that over.
So how are we on
– not great defenses coming up.
How are we on defense?
Not as rosy there. We're still middle of the pack in success rate, seventh in the conference. On the pass defense, we're fifth in the conference in yards per pass play, 10th in sack rate, 11th in pressure. None of that's great, but second in havoc rate and on pass plays. So that's, the defense is breaking up passes, getting a couple interceptions. On the ground, 8th in the conference in yards per run play, 10th in yards before contact, 3rd in yards after contact, and 12th in havoc percentage. So what that tells me is, we're giving up a lot of yards before first contact, but we're not giving up many broken tackles.
I'm interested about this pressure rate because it seems that the defensive line
guys have been getting into. What's that?
It seems like the defensive line is getting towards the quarterback. They just aren't getting home. So maybe those aren't getting counted as pressures.
Yeah. I don't know. And they're definitely struggling with causing any kind of issues in the ground game.
Yeah.
The linebackers are doing really well with that, containing it. But we're not getting any kind of push up front.
Yeah, a young, inexperienced defensive line that is not playing up to snuff at the moment is what this looks like. All right, what are we facing on Saturday?
A bad LSU defense, offense, right? That is, they're above average offense and a defense that's about as bad as Ole Miss's.
Wow.
The LSU defense is interesting, though, because they are the worst in the conference pretty much in like just giving up yards. But they're one of the better defenses, interestingly enough, in havoc plays.
Yeah, they're getting to the quarterback a ton.
Yeah, they're the best team in the pass rush, getting sacks, causing turnovers. So they're go big or go home. That's all they can really do right now.
Fascinating.
So it's going to be interesting. I think Bo's going to have to. We've talked about the running, scrambling, throwing it away at the last second, how that could turn into a pick six really easily.
Yeah.
LSU is going to take advantage of that.
Well, we didn't see any of that this week. So hopefully that'll continue into this week with this. I mean, these guys watch tape, obviously, so they'll know better than we will. Let's hope that we have seen most of the end of that stuff from Bo.
Yeah,
I mean, the less you ask him,
Cowboy,
to pass, yeah, the less you ask him to pass, the less you're going to see that stuff. So, I think this is a little bit off topic, just because we're not talking about Bo specifically, but I think bad Bo is a result of putting too much on Bo Nix his entire time at Auburn.
Yeah. I mean, he's been...
Especially this year. My God. But like,
it's kind of like bad Jared was because he was having to do too much as a freshman.
Sure.
Realizing that we finally have a five-star running back that can shoulder the load.
Right.
As opposed to a two-star starting running back.
Exactly. I think that has a lot to do with it, and I would not be surprised to see, if not a completely different Bo, a much better Bo for the remainder of the season, as long as we have Tank healthy.
I think you're right, man. I think the best thing about what Tank is able to do, and Sean, again, having this running back room with DJ Williams, the ghost of Mark Anthony Richards, Sean Shivers, and Tank Bigsby, it feels as if we are in a different universe than we were this time last year.
Right.
Don't count out JJ Pigwee either.
Yeah. You say that, but for sure. Like last year when it was Booby, Sean, and Harold Joyner and Cam Martin, these four versus those four, even this Sean Shivers versus that Sean Shivers,
sure,
I would take. I mean, this may be the best running back trio in DJ, Sean, and Tank that Gus has had since he's been here.
Yeah, I'll argue that. That 2013 group had four NFL running backs in the room.
That's true.
But man, Tank Marshall, especially with a freshman Tank, one of those guys being a freshman.
Yeah.
I
definitely think we might be seeing that Tank is the most talented running back Auburn's had since 2001. Well, best freshman running back, at least.
I'm doing guy blinking incredulously.
Yeah. Well, there's a guy named Kerryon, but he was not the feature back his freshman year.
Trey Mason was the SEC offensive player of the year.
But he wasn't a freshman.
Well, that's true.
So
I think by the time Tank is a junior, we're not going to have him as a senior. But I think by the time he's here,
Ryan was
just the program doesn't go nuclear at that point.
I thought Ryan was murdered by Cadillac Williams. I couldn't hear you. I figured Cadillac Williams had murdered you because you cut out.
My point was he might be the best running back since Cadillac.
Sure.
Ronnie Brown.
I mean, yes, this is debatable.
Same time. It doesn't matter.
Ronnie did not play as much as his freshman.
And was the higher draft pick. I would love to put Tank in that debate. That's what I'll say. I would love for this kid to be in that conversation in 2 years.
If he gets to 1,000 yards as a freshman in a 10-game season.
Where he didn't play the first game,
basically.
Right.
If he's averaging, you're telling me if he's averaging 100 yards a game in an all SEC season, that is nuts.
Yeah, I'm glad that we have figured out that he's our feature running back. I'm glad that we have Sean Shivers to step in and take his carries, and I'm glad we have DJ Williams to come in on third down and catch ball if he needs to.
Yeah. Well, guys.
And JJ Pigwee. How do we say his name?
I think it's Piggies.
All right.
What I said earlier this week is that he is what Derrick Brown would be if Derrick Brown got to play offense.
Except he's not. Except Derrick Brown's bigger than him. He looks. Sure.
He looks bigger than he is.
But he looks like he's Derrick Brown's size.
He's
like
only 6'1", right?
He's 6'2", 300, I think.
Okay, 6'2".
You know, DB was 6'5", 330.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, the speed that he has at that size, where he's just laying people out in the open field. I mean.
Well, he set a pick on a guy in the Ole Miss game.
That guy never saw it coming.
God, I don't know how that guy played the rest of the game.
Just a reminder that Malik Dunbar was 6'6", 230. So.
Wild.
Just keep that in mind, that Malik Dunbar would tower over J.J. Figgies.
He's Jared Harper's height.
Yeah, sure. He's Bryce Brown's height.
Yeah, Bryce Brown's 6'4".
I think he's listed at 6'2", Chief.
There's no way. He's taller than me.
Bryce Brown is... Oh, not the running back.
We're doing a terrible job of vamping here, Chief.
Yeah. No,
we're just kind of letting it sit.
Well,
Bryce Brown is 6'3" listed in the G League. 6'3" from Tucker High School.
Okay, so close enough. Put an extra 100 pounds on Bryce.
In Stone Mountain, Georgia.
He's listed at 6'4" in our media guide, so that's
sure. So was Vajeria was listed at 6 foot even.
Yeah, right. Maybe 5'10".
He's 100 pounds heavier than Bryce Brown, as Ryan said. He's exactly 100 pounds heavier.
Wow.
And that's the second year in a row we have just killed somebody in Ole Miss after the Derrick Brown open field tackle last year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, I love that play.
He murdered that guy.
Well, guys, what are your predictions for this weekend? Because I am taking Auburn, and I'm taking them to win outright, and I'm taking it to be an under.
I haven't been to a game that we've lost this year, so we're gonna win.
You haven't been to a game.
Hey,
that's not the point.
That's not the point.
I still haven't sat down and really decided where I'm at on this game.
What's the spread? Ryan, come on, no one listens to this.
See, part of me likes the pattern that well, does not like it, but seeing the pattern of losing and winning every other game for like 8 games now.
What are you?
No, I'm taking a win. It's this is another game Gus still needs to win.
That's very Jason Garrett of Gus.
I'll say it's a spread. 31-30.
It opened at Auburn by 3, but I believe now it's LSU by 2.
Uh oh. Vegas doesn't like us. No, we're gonna cover. We're gonna win. And I don't know. I don't know what the over under is.
Tank for 200 more yards. It's gonna pull a Kenny Irons.
Whoa. We heard it here first, though.
I say Tank gets at least 150, and Bo has another good game because he's back at home. He does tend to play a little better at home, so.
All right.
Bo knows.